Hi, I'm Brenda Tremblay. Welcome to this podcast from WXXI in Rochester, New York. Think for a moment about Georgia O'Keeffe. Do you see an image? Do you see a bold painting of a flower or a skull? Georgia O'Keeffe's artwork is ubiquitous, everywhere, iconic. It's also provided the inspiration for a new piece of music that's going to premiere in Rochester on Saturday, November 12th, and be re-performed on Monday, November 14th at Lincoln Center in New York City. The University of Rochester's Eastman School of Music Philharmonia Orchestra is going to present the world premiere performance of Letters from Georgia, a new song cycle by Pulitzer Prize-winning composer Kevin Putz. The song cycle is going to be sung by Rochester native Renee Fleming. I had the privilege of speaking with the composer Kevin Putz about the project, which began when he was asked to write something for his alma mater.
Eastman had plans to take their orchestra to New York City and perform at Lincoln Center, and I think they wanted to commission an alumni composer for an alumni performer, and so they got me and Renee involved, and that's how it started. And then, you know, Renee and I talked about what kind of piece it would be, and we both agreed it should be centered around a historical figure who was American and who was a woman. And I just happened to find a quote online of Georgia O'Keeffe, which I thought was very beautiful and which inspired music from me. And then shortly after, found that she had written volumes of letters to both her eventual husband, Alfred Stieglitz, and also to her friend, Anita Pulitzer. And we've started pursuing the rights for those letters, and that's how it began.
Can you remember the original quote that struck you?
Yeah, she said, my first memory is of the brightness of light, light all around. And I just thought, you know, I could imagine that being sung by Renee right at the beginning of the piece and of the orchestra behind her, creating a kind of luminous sound which would kind of envelop her. And actually, throughout I call them poems, but they're really just excerpts of letters. The sun is a constant kind of theme, and the imagery of the sun is always there throughout the poem. So it worked out well to start that way.
I just want to circle back quickly and ask you about why you and Renee wanted to focus on an American woman.
I think it's important to, for one thing, for her. I mean, she's, you know, I think that's something that she believes in, and celebrating women who have done great things. And we even talked about some contemporary ideas. But, you know, in the end, I think I was looking for someone who said things which were, you know, poetic and could be sung. And this just worked out. I don't know. It felt right to her. I think Georgia O'Keeffe, and the more research she did on her, I think Renee got more and more fascinated, as I did too, you know, when I started reading these letters. So that's how it began.
Tell us about the experience, Kevin, of reading her letters. Did you get books out of the library? Did you have to go somewhere, read them online?
There are two volumes. One is published by Yale University Press, and these are letters between O'Keeffe and Alfred Stieglitz, who she met early on in her career. He presented her early drawings, I think, in his gallery in New York, and they fell in love eventually and had a long-distance relationship for much of that time, which accounts for this huge volume of letters, which is called My Far Away One, which I ordered. It's about 4 inches thick and full of letters. And then another volume called Lovingly Georgia, which are letters between Georgia and her friend Anita Pulitzer, like I said. So I just bought both of those books and spent months and months reading them and finding moments which I found beautiful, poetic, kind of, you know, invited music in. You know, some of the letters are somewhat mundane. I mean, you know, just this is what I did today. but others, she's very rhapsodic sometimes about her surroundings. She's writing from the Southwest for much of her life, and she loved that country. And there are so many different emotions in these letters, you know, from her feelings of longing and her passion for Stieglitz sometimes, and kind of a self-deprecating wit that many wouldn't probably not associate with O'Keeffe. So there's so much in those letters.
What really surprised you about reading her letters?
I think I would say that there's a kind of persona that one associates with O'Keeffe, which really, you know, I think when you get into these letters, it's a lot deeper than that. You know, she could be, I think she was thought of as kind of aloof and serious, and she was that way much of the time, but she was also deeply passionate and funny. I mean, sort of, she had a kind of dry wit. I think those things, you know, one would maybe not associate with her, but there's definitely evidence of that in the letters.
Were you familiar with her paintings going into the project?
Yeah, very. I mean, I think everyone is familiar. I mean, they're ubiquitous. I've known them my whole life. And in fact, it was interesting approaching Yale University and the O'Keeffe estate for rights to these letters, because I think they hadn't encountered it before. They're always getting requests to have rights to her images and her paintings for various, you know, functions and reasons, but I think they hadn't really encountered this. Nobody had ever asked for the rights to celebrate the things she said, and so I felt kind of emboldened by that, actually. I felt this is something really special that we're doing, and something different.
So how did you do it? Once you got rights to some of the letters, how did you as a composer go about bringing her voice and her letters and her poetry to life with music?
That actually comes pretty, pretty easy to me, easily to me. You know, I read something and I hear music. It was easy for me when she's talking about her feelings about the sun and the glorious sky and the surroundings. It's really, music comes very easily to me when I read those letters. Really, the process of distilling this massive volume of letters into five relatively short excerpts, which were all lyrical in a way that could be sung well in the space of about 25 minutes, that was the real challenge of the piece. And also putting those excerpts together into an order that would make sense, not only musically, but also in terms of a narrative, which hopefully the audience will follow to some extent.
How long is the song cycle? How many songs? Tell us a little bit about the structure of them.
Right. Well, it begins with this quote that I mentioned earlier, where she says, my first memory is of the brightness of light all around. And so she sings that, and the orchestra sort of engulfs her in sound and color and light in an orchestral way. And then there's a short orchestral interlude, and then there are five movements. The first is called Taos, and it's Georgia, really one of her first encounters with the Southwest, which of course she developed this very strong affinity for. And she sees a Pueblo ritual, and I think she sort of dreams of the kind of freedom she sees of the Native Americans that were part of this ritual. And she talks about expanding into the horizon. I mean, she's really just completely taken by this part of the country. The second movement is called Violin, and it's really funny. I mean, she says she's practicing the violin, and she says, "You have no." She says, "Never in your wildest dreams could you imagine the noises I get out of it." And then the third movement is called Ache, and this is it's a very passionate love poem to Alfred, to Stieglitz, and it's the longest movement of the piece. And then we move to another kind of big orchestral interlude, which actually recalls the music from the opening of the piece. And then a movement which I call Friends, and she's talking about, it's later in her life, and she says, by now, many of my friends have died, and she's really questioning the nature of friendship. She's talking about people she knows who are around her, and she's saying, are they friends? I'm not sure if they're friends, you know? And it's kind of sad, kind of poignant, I think, what she says. And then it moves directly into the last movement, which I call Canyon. And it's, I feel, even though it wasn't the letter was not written at the end of her life, I kind of use it in that context. I imagine it as the end of her life. And she says that, tonight I walked into the sunset, and the sky was, you know, this kind of talks about the holiness of the sky, and I find it very beautiful, and I imagine it as the end of her life, even though, as I said, it's not. So there's kind of an imaginary chronology that I established throughout the piece.
It sounds like a fascinating arc, almost a storyline.
Yeah, that was the intention. I mean, again, it's really imaginary, but I wanted to give the sense of her her long life. She really lived a very long time, and much of it spent virtually alone, working in the Southwest.
What did you learn about Georgia that was fascinating to you?
Well, I think that the impact of her solitude, her strength of character, and her bold vision as an artist are all things that the letters underline. And you really do have great respect, you know, as a fellow artist, you know, I have such respect for someone who believes with such conviction and what she was doing. And her satisfaction with being out there alone with just her surroundings, the environment around her, and her thoughts and her art. It's an amazing, she was an amazing, iconic person, and a bold visionary, really, in the art world.
Do you see her paintings any differently now?
Absolutely. You know, the more you know about someone, it really does change. You know, it personalizes the whole experience, I think, of seeing her art and knowing so much about what she went through and her early career and becoming so completely famous. You know, that's something that I think is not negligible. I mean, it's something that affected her, I think, and led to the decision she made in her life, I think.
Kevin, tell us about what it was like to work with Renee. Was there much back and forth on this project, or was she like waiting for you, like the shoemaker and the elves, to give her something beautiful to sing?
Well, I think a little of both. I think that she has had experience with composers before, and she knows that you just have to sort of leave them alone and let them do their thing. At the same time, she's has been very involved in it from the very beginning. You know, we had emails back and forth about the choices of the letters that I used, and she had input on that, which was extremely helpful. And now, really, now we're working on things more. We're working together more than ever because we're putting this piece together. In fact, today she's going to sing some of it for me at her apartment, and then we'll be in Rochester together next week with the orchestra. But yeah, it's been amazing. She's so committed to it, and she's so enthusiastic about it. And for me, you know, it's a dream come true. I mean, when I was a freshman at the Eastman School of Music, I certainly would not have anticipated this kind of collaboration. It's a dream, and it's what composers aspire to, you know, to work with someone of her artistic caliber. The great thing about that is that they bring something that you didn't even anticipate, you know, in your wildest, your inner ear, when you're hearing this music, you hear it, you know, you try to hear it under ideal circumstances, but an artist like Renee, you know, has something that is intangible and indescribable, really, that's in her voice and in the way she moves from note to note, and that's what's so incredible about it.
So you have not heard her sing with an orchestra yet. We're about a week and a half away from the premiere.
Well, this is how, you know, I've been working in orchestra and opera, and with opera, there's usually a lot more time to work with the performers, you know, maybe 4 or 5 weeks of rehearsal leading up to the premiere. In the orchestral world, even here with this a student orchestral experience, where they have more rehearsals for one concert, but you know, still the soloist comes in 3 or 4 days before the premiere, and that's the first time I get to hear it. So there's a sense of urgency and immediacy, and it's intense. I mean, but this is the way it works, and the orchestra has sent me recordings of them rehearsing, so I have some idea of how it's sounding. The kids are doing amazing work with the piece, and putting Renee with it, I think, will be pretty exhilarating for them, I think, to accompany such a world-class performer.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they're beyond excited, for sure. And then going to New York, you know, in Carnegie Hall, it's going to be a life moment for most of those musicians. Mm-hmm. How long is the piece, Kevin, altogether?
I think it's about 23 minutes.
Okay, so it is a major work.
It is a major work. You know, we had, I think, when Jamail Rossi, who's the director at Eastman, contacted me about it. I think they were thinking of a much shorter piece, but you know, once Renee and I started talking about it, she said, "Well, you know, if we're going to do this, let's do something. You know, let's do a big piece." And I was very happy to hear that. So, yeah, it's a big piece, and actually, we're planning on expanding it into an even bigger piece, which would include baritone, and that would be Alfred Stieglitz. So it'd really be more about the relationship between O'Keefe and Stieglitz and their correspondence.
How would you describe their relationship?
It was many things. It was professional. It was passionate, and it was friendly. I mean, it was complicated because he helped her get her start as an artist, and she was indebted to him for that. But they were very much in love with each other. So
at this point in time, a week and a half away, how do you feel about the premiere coming up next Saturday?
I am always nervous, and I think it's just a feeling that I'm so close to the music I write, and I care so much about it kind of working in the way that I imagine it working. So I know that Renee will be amazing. I know that the orchestra will be amazing, but just a matter of, you know, am I going to hear what I imagined? And every composer goes through this. And really, once you get through the premiere, or even, you know, once you start to get into the rehearsals and you realize, okay, this is how I imagine it, or maybe even better than I imagine it, then you relax. But until that happens, there's a real feeling of anticipation, and you start to think about the piece and, like, look at the score, and, gosh, did I orchestrate that the best way I could? And I wonder if this part is too long, and those kinds of things start to enter in. But I'm very excited about it.
I can imagine. Well, congratulations on such a huge project. It's getting so much attention, not here in Rochester, not just here in Rochester, but obviously, you know, around the country. Kevin, is there anything that I haven't asked you about that you wanted to add?
I would just say that, you know, this is an amazing moment for me because my years at Eastman, as an undergrad and as a grad student, were, I would say, magical is the way that I would put it. They, you know, it was the ideal place for me to grow as a musician. I grew up in a small town in the Midwest, in a kind of basically a farming town with a small college, and I didn't have any friends who did what I did, who played the piano and listened to Mozart and tried to compose fugues. And you know, so when I went to Eastman, it was just such a mutually supportive environment with the greatest faculty. And so for me to be back there, it's not only going to be incredibly nostalgic, but just very meaningful for me.
Well, that's wonderful. It's nice that you're able to give a gift back to the school. So congratulations again. And I know I speak for thousands of people in Rochester looking forward to hearing the premiere next Saturday night. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Kevin Putz is a Pulitzer Prize-winning composer whose new song cycle, Letters from Georgia, will be premiered on Saturday, November 12th in Rochester, New York by Renee Fleming. It'll be performed in New York City on Monday, November 14th at Lincoln Center. I'm Brenda Tremblay. Thank you for listening to this podcast from WXXI in Rochester, New York.